Welcome to the Vortex Nation podcast, brought to you by lovers of hunting, shooting, public lands, the Second Amendment, and good food. All right, everybody, we've got a good one here. If you've listened to our podcast for a while now, at some point in time in the past, we had the guys across the table on with Mark and myself. We have Adam Maxwell and Ruben Alexson here to carry on talking more and more about suppressors. So I know we certainly convinced Mark in that episode, and actually over the course of a couple of hunts since then, especially our last our coyote series. If you missed that, go back and check it out, our Nebraska coyote series. Very interesting stuff. Mark, you've been convinced to want to get into suppressors. You've always thought suppressors are cool, never had an issue with them, but it was kind of like, you know, there's the, oh, do I want to wait all this time? There's a tax stamp. Do I want to, you know, like, do it in a way to make sure, like, am I somehow going to become a criminal by owning one? But now you know it's really not that bad of a process. You want to get one.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and I don't have one yet. I do want to get one. I think part of it is almost like a philosophical opposition to the fact that you have to get the tax stamp and stuff like that. But I'm done boycotting it. I think I'm going to begin this journey, Jim. But you're right, man. I mean, there are so many advantages. It's probably a little late to mitigate the chronic ringing in my ears right now, but maybe we can prevent further damage, and I think suppressors can do that.
I did learn that all hearing damage is cumulative, so no time like the present then to stop the bleeding.
Bam. You don't get it back.
Noted.
So no, I mean that is, you don't. And as a kid, you're growing up, you're like, ah, not me. Like, meh, yeah. And then all of a sudden, you're like, this isn't normal.
Right.
Yeah,
if you want a volume knob that you couldn't turn back down.
Yeah, if you want to see that illustrated, go to a gun club, the Wednesday night members meeting, and listen to how many times you hear people say, what?
Yeah. Huh? What?
The civil discourse of a gun club board meeting.
Oh, man. They're going to write about this.
Most of it based on misunderstandings.
Oh, boy.
The names are different, but the people are the same, no matter where you go.
So, hopefully, with all that said, and if you haven't caught our last episode, which is Why Suppressed, that's the one I'm referring to, check it out. But if you've been convinced you want to do the whole suppressor thing, I think one of the fun parts about getting a suppressor, but also it can be a bit complicated, and you got to look around a bunch, and there's differing opinions all over the place, is which suppressor are you going to get? I mean, we sometimes have the joy of explaining to different people what different scopes are good for, right? Mm-hmm. So in the end, we realize that to the untrained eye, most rifle scopes all kind of look like black tubes with turrets on them, right? And there's some that are just a little bit different size and length, but otherwise they all kind of look about the same. And I will say that with suppressors, it's a very similar thing. I mean, they're all black tubes. They don't even have turrets on them. They're all just black tubes that get put on the end of a gun. Some of them are long, some of them are fatter, some of them are skinnier, shorter, whatever. And it's hard to figure out which one's best for you.
Yeah.
They're the people of firearms accessories.
I make the joke that like rifle scopes from 10 feet away are all the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you're not looking through it and it looks like relatively the same, they're all the same.
Right.
And up close, suppressors are even less interesting because you don't look through them at all. It's a tube.
Yeah.
when I was in retail, people would always want to come in for cordial visits with their suppressors that are in jail. And it's,
I think,
like,
that's conjugal visits.
There you go.
No. Well.
But, yeah. Anyway,
I hope
they wanted. They're like, pull it out of the back so I can see it.
That sounds uncomfortable. I mean, isn't even.
That sounds illegal. That's more illegal than not having the stamps.
Oh, it's weird. Believe me. But they'd pick it up and they'd look.
Well, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, cool. It's still here.
Do they talk to it? Like
Sometimes.
But they are. It's a black tube on the end.
Yeah,
you don't
tube.
Appreciate it until you shoot through one.
Mm-hmm.
And you attach it to your gun. So you guys have a lot of suppressors that you've either shot with or that you've shot with. And probably of many different types. Some of them are going on carbines. Some of them are going on long-range rifles, pistols.
Rimfires,
for sure. Heck, even shotguns. We've done a 10-minute talk on that with Mr. Dan.
Muzzleloaders. Did you say muzzleloaders?
Muzzleloaders.
Oh, yeah, I got one of those.
And so how are you going about, like, I guess we first have to, you know, probably clarify which type of firearm we're talking about. You know, let's just start off, for example, with your classic bolt action rifle.
Yep.
How are you sifting through all the different kinds of suppressors that are available. All of them can be claiming different decibel levels. So there's different calibers that they're designed for, rated for. There's, you know, there's full auto ones. I don't need that because I'm just going in a bolt gun, right?
There's three. What are you there's doing? Three big categories that you can chop all the products down into first. That helps. One is rim fire.
Okay,
they're their own thing. Pistol, they're their own thing.
Right.
And center fire high pressure rifle.
Okay. Yep.
They're their own thing. And
there's some crossover.
There can be crossover, right?
Right.
Yeah, but like generally speaking, that's like they've taken one kind and kind of adapted it to do other stuff. But like that's the three categories that you can kind of slice and dice right down the bat. So if you know, if you're talking about bolt action rifles, I assuming center fire rifles.
Sure. Yeah.
So we're talking about rifle cans.
Yeah.
You know, and then you go down into attachment method, decibel rating. Construction
size, weight, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think size and weight and attachment method are really like
in rifle cans. That's what it is. And then firing schedule. Do you want to get it hot often, or is it something that's going to go on a hunting rifle and never see an aggressive firing schedule?
Okay, got it.
I think it's pretty fair to say that you know, like in the world of what's sold on the market right now. I was listening to something that Silencer Shop did recently, and they basically said that about 60% of the suppressors that are sold in the U.S. are run through Silencer Shop kiosks, and which we can get into a little bit later. It's kind of a cool way to do it and to make all the tax stuff really easy to understand. But about 60% of the suppressors in the country are sold through them, and the vast majority of those are 30 caliber direct thread rifle cans. So when we look at that, there is, because I think that you know, is the kind of the majority of the lower cost too. Mm-hmm. Like it takes a couple hundred dollars off of a suppressor. That's you know, true. When you figure $100 attachment that they have to include with the can and then adapting some sort of quick release method or quick attach method.
Oh, you're talking about just kind of the direct thread part of it.
Yeah. Then? So it'll thread to, you know, 5/8, 24 or half 28 or whatever you want it. But you know, that I think is a lot of the cans that are sold. And so that's the direction a lot of people
go. And you said 30 cal was what percent?
It's the vast majority.
The vast majority.
It wasn't a percentage.
Yeah. So that's interesting to me, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, because I think, like, all right, diving into the wood caliber can or whatever, what it's specced out for, I think, would you say that because, you know, it's a $200 tax stamp on top of, generally speaking, they can be pretty costly suppressors on top of that. And you have the waiting time. So usually people aren't, I say usually, I don't know, maybe some days people are, but most people will want to ideally get maybe one or two. There's people out there and plenty of people out there who are all like, add to cart all of the suppressors. But a lot of people out there do just want to see if they can get by with one or two.
Yep.
So if you go with like a 30 cal can, that's going to work with your 308. It's going to work with your 30-06 hunting rifle.
Five,
it's
going to
work with your
6.5.
Yeah. And then it's also going to work with your 223 and some of the other smaller calibers and like, you know, 20-something cal.
Yep.
So is that like, it's not really an issue, I think, just for clarification for people out there, to shoot a smaller caliber through a suppressor than it's technically designated for?
No,
correct?
And actually, like, it can be better at times. Like, if you were running, you know, an AR gas gun of some sort or even a piston-driven gun, that larger bore can actually allow some of that back pressure to escape faster instead of forcing it back down the barrel in, you know, through the ejection port. So talking with some industry guys that work for a company that makes suppressors, a lot of times they will actually, like, purposefully run 30 cal bore suppressors with 5.56 guns.
Interesting. Does that just keep the whole system, like, cleaner then? You're not...
Well, you also get increased volume. Then? Generally speaking, 30 caliber cans are larger, like in volume.
Yeah.
For a suppressor to work, essentially, we have baffles that have to get close to the bullet.
Yep.
And then we need a volume of space for that gas to expand into. And generally speaking, a 30 caliber can, like, I mean, on the table we have a Silencer Co. Saker. The 5.56 version of this is physically smaller.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So by putting the 7.62 on there, you are attaching a larger expansion chamber than the comparable 5.56 model.
Gotcha.
And you do one area that you can suffer a little bit in doing this, like this can's got a replaceable end cap, so you could put a 6.5 end cap or a 2.23 end cap on it, but you're really only taking one baffle. It's not even a baffle. It's just a cap. So you're not really reducing the decibels that much by going from one end cap to a smaller one to match your bore. I think for what I've remember hearing, if you were to go like from a 30 cal can down, you know, and you shoot instead of a 308 in it, you shoot like a 270, you could lose a decibel or so of sound reduction. Going from there to 6.5 could be about the same. So you could lose 3 to 4 decibels going down to like a 223.
Okay.
So if it says it's, you know, it'll bring center fire to 130 decibels or something like that, or 138 decibels or whatever ends up, hearing safe is about 140. So if you were running a can that kind of was on that ragged edge of taking a 30 cal down to hearing safe, you might be slightly above hearing safe with that, like a 223 through it.
Even though it has more volume?
Yeah, and that's just because you are getting some of that gas escaping around the bullet as the bullet's exiting. So, so, but the benefit of that would be that a lot of times a can with larger volume has better tone. And so tone is something that if you could test suppressors in a gun shop, and if you go to a dealer that allows you to, you know, go back in the range or something and test a suppressor, you'll find that tone is one of those things that can be equally as important as the actual decibel rating, because how it sounds, but you can't put a number on tone.
Yeah, you can't objectively measure it. It's kind of like buying a guitar and going to the guitar store and playing all of them. Like you can't articulate the difference between maybe a little
Would one, I'm just trying to process it. So would one, like, it might have more of a crack, and the other one will be like
more
even
of a
though
thud
like or... the decibels could be the same, but it'll almost be more pleasant to your ear.
There's higher pitched, lower, you know, more
it would
a thud
be pitch
noise.
Yeah. More of a pitch. Okay.
So there, I find that when you shoot, like, I've got a couple of direct thread titanium suppressors, and I find that those, I like the tone better on that than comparing it to, I have a suppressor that has a titanium sleeve, but stainless baffles. I actually like the tone of a titanium suppressor in that case with that specific gun. Now, I'm not saying across the board, like, titanium suppressors are going to have better tone, but if you set them side by side and two identical guns, you can tell one of them sounds different.
Interesting.
And it's just more pleasing to the ear.
I've got a, so talking about, you know, you're talking about a 30 cal, it kind of, this is not the case, but it's kind of like, oh, I want one suppressor to do it all. So I'll get the 30 and I can run my 5.56 in it and all that good stuff. Are you making a compromise with that, with size and weight though?
There's like always compromises.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Everything's compromise.
So one of the things that can happen, Jim, like you said, a lot of times people will, like, I want to buy one or two suppressors. I'm not looking to get a bunch of them. My recommendation would be, you know, if you want a suppressor that you can put on multiple guns, you may want to look at getting that one as, you know, having a quick attach method, you know, something, you know, the Dead Air Chemo or the Silencer Co. ASR or something like that, you know, something that you can have these muzzle brakes or flash hiders on multiple guns and this suppressor can go on all of them. That's, I think, where a lot of that maybe compromise happens, in that you would buy a 30 cal suppressor just so that you don't take a 223 can and put it on a 30 cal accidentally because they have the same muzzle device. So that can be compromised, where you're getting a system that's not really optimized for any one thing, but it'll work with all of them. We talk about that with rifle scopes all the time. The person who wants the do-all rifle scope, well, you might end up getting a rifle scope that sacrifices in one area or another. It's kind of like, if you want to be able to shoot long range, but you buy a 1-6, you might be sacrificing some of that precision at longer ranges, your ability to see the target. But then when you look at, like, in suppressors, if you want to be able to switch it from multiple guns, you know, you might have to get a muzzle device that doesn't match your barrel profile on one of those guns perfectly. And so now it kind of looks funky hanging out there on the end. Or if you were going with a direct thread suppressor, you might have to thread a barrel on one of your guns to a thread that you might not normally thread that barrel to, right? Like, just generally speaking, a lot of 223 caliber guns or 22 caliber guns will come threaded half 28. A lot of guns above that, 6mm and up, will be threaded 5/8 24 to really have a thicker diameter around the bore at the muzzle, so you have a little more meat. And if you were to say, like, I want to buy a direct thread half 28 can with a 30 caliber hole through it, now all of a sudden you got to thread your 6.5 to a half 28, and then your barrel's starting to get really thin around the muzzle crown.
I mean, it sounds like the answer is actually more suppressors.
That's usually wrong. How it starts. And I could even use myself an example. The first one I put a stamp on was one of those cans that is very much advertised as one of those do-alls. Like, it's lightweight. It's 30 cal. It's got all the end caps. It's got all the, you know, attachment, you know, modularity on the attachments. You can do QD. You can do direct thread. You can do all those things. And I shot that one just long enough to figure out which of those compromises were important to me.
Yeah.
And then I was like, you know what? This one does have a fast attach system, but I don't like this one.
Right.
Or, yeah. It is pretty lightweight, but it's not quite light enough. Or, you know, it doesn't sound quite good on, and that's usually, so you go down
one,
the like
or, a, or, like, I thought I was going to use this on 30 cal guns, but I'm pretty much only using it on ARs.
And that's me. So, yeah. Like, now I'm, like, 5.56 can guy because, like, that's really what I use them for.
Mm-hmm. I have two dedicated 223 suppressors, and those are going on 5.56 guns.
Mm-hmm.
They have muzzle devices that if I were to put that can on the same quick attach, the muzzle devices are designed so that that company's 30 cal can won't accept this 223 suppressor.
Oh, okay.
Even though they look the same, they have the same general attachment method, it won't work. So,
kind of a built-in safety there.
But that's two suppressors out of, you know, potentially like 10 or 11, right?
Potentially.
So, potentially.
You never know.
Terrible boating accident. But there's one cool part about, you know, we talk about the compromises.
Tragic.
And I think a lot of times people think there's more to it. You know, like, I think that it's like, well, there's actually this kind of this, not a formula where you're plugging numbers in, but there's definitely, if a can has lower volume, it's going to be a little louder. If it's smaller, that means it has lower volume, you know, both diameter and length. So typically what you're not going to find is you're not going to find a suppressor that's really short and stubby. There's a couple of suppressors out there that are, you know, hearing safe, or maybe they have a certain tone where it doesn't sound as. I'm thinking of one from like Wyoming Arms. They have a really short 5-inch suppressor that's actually pretty quiet, but has a lot to do with the type of gun it's designed to use on and stuff like that. So. And how the tone of that suppressor is. But, you know, usually if you're taking two cans and you're like there's a kind of this trend where it's like the full length can, and then there's the S, and then there's the K. And so it's like the regular length, the mid length. And then, you know, those cans are internally have very similar design in the baffles. And, you know, the shorter one's going to have fewer baffles. That's going to be a little louder. Lighter cans, if you take, you know, two suppressors, they're the same size, physical size, and one's lighter because it has, you know, it's either titanium or Inconel or some sort of lightweight material, the lighter can's going to heat up faster.
Yeah.
And that can be a good thing, too, because it can cool off faster, but it will heat up faster. And so,
right.
You know, suppressor mirage over that suppressor is going to be apparent in fewer shots.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So, yeah, suppressor mirage. That's something we chatted about with Seth Toy over here when we talked all about mirage in one of our podcasts. But so that would be more prevalent than more likely in a lighter weight can.
Yep.
That just kind of, I feel like intuitively, I can't even put my finger on it, like, until you explained it, but it just sort of would intuitively sort of make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, you know, if you, as you go up, and let's just say you go to a suppressor that, you know, Jim, so you got this Saker, right?
Yeah.
And this Saker is, it's a 30 cal bore, and it's got this attachment back here where it's your ASR or your, I can never remember the name of this quick attach method. But if you thread this portion off, right, you take this back half off, you can run in a direct thread adapter. So then this can that has this 4-ounce or 3-ounce back half for quick attach, this mechanism that has a bunch of springs and, you know, teeth in it to ratchet shut. Well, if you take this mechanism off and you put a direct thread on, we could reduce that weight by a considerable amount.
For sure.
Okay.
So that's one of those trade-offs where it's like if you want to add a quick attach method, you can usually assume that's going to be a little heavier. I look at a suppressor like this, and I could go online, and if I was going to a silencer dealer or silencer shop or something like that, I could find a 30 cal suppressor that has direct thread built into it, so we don't have to, we don't have to adapt something, right? We don't have to take something out. But if cost becomes a factor, well, there's another trade-off, right? Like, as we start to buy, like, you might look at this suppressor and think, that's the do-all can. It's got a back half that can be interchanged for quick release or direct thread. It's got interchangeable front caps. Well, this suppressor may be $300 to $400 more than a suppressor that doesn't have that. So there's trade-offs, and it's not always going to be in performance. It might be in just adding cost to the suppressor.
Mm-hmm.
I think of a rifle scope like the LHT 3-15. It's like one of my favorite rifle scopes because it has such a wide magnification range. It's got locking turret system, all these things. You start to bump up the cost as you get to that, right? So there's always these trade-offs, whether it be a performance, whether it be materials that it's made with. Sometimes it's just cost.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to get the best thing that you really always dreamt of, you might just have to pay for it.
Yeah, if you think of, again, and with rifle scopes, it's like, look at like the 4.5-27 Gen 2 or Gen 3, 1-10. Those are all going to be optics that are very capable. They have a wider magnification range or more capabilities, but they also cost more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and then you can look at that too and go, well, what am I using it for? It's like, yeah, that's maybe the best cream of the crop, features out the yin yang, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're not going to be using those features, get the other one.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I think, Ruby, you or Adam mentioned this before. So, in talking about tone and just seeing how a suppressor performs on your gun, because I think that is something that is really nice to be able to do if you can. Did you say some dealerships will even let you try different suppressors?
Prior to
making the whole purchase and that route down that waiting road and tax stamps and all that, they'll let you try it out.
Yeah, if it's a retailer that has a range.
Yeah.
And if they're selling NFA stuff and they have a range, they're generally game for letting you try them.
Yeah.
That's nice.
And do you try that on your firearm then?
It depends on
I would
on
imagine
the
it's totally dependent
they,
upon the
They usually have like demo cans, that are theirs.
Yeah.
That's business specific. Some might not care. Others
and we're
would.
Also we're also kind of in this market now where there's a YouTube reviewer 10 on every product out there, and so you can typically go. And I remember years back there was a suppressor that came onto the market, and it was unique. It was adaptable. You could put a different end cap. You could put a different back end on it. You could direct thread it, quick attach. And it seemed like in social media, in reviews, and ads from suppressor dealers, like this was the only suppressor you saw. And it was very, very popular for a lot of reasons in that it had a lot of features. It was at a good price. And if you're starting to think to yourself like, wow, I've seen that XYZ suppressor all over the place and guys are posting it, with pictures of hunting and, I've seen guys shoot matches with it or, sniper comps or whatever. There's a good chance that that suppressor is all over the place because it has a good reputation. I mean, this is something where it's not like if you don't like it, you sell it because you can't really do that. So if you see people that are really happy with a suppressor and they're talking about it, it's a buy once, you're stuck with it forever type of product. So there's a good chance that there's a reason why people say good things about something.
Yeah. If you can do it in person, it's always better though. It's kind of like anything that revolves around your senses, which I guess basically is sort of everything that we end up buying ultimately, but you can never really tell if you try and watch it online. And I'm thinking of, you see somebody shoot with a suppressor online or on Instagram or whatever, you watch a video of it and you're like, oh, that seemed pretty quiet because you're watching it on your phone, which is playing it at hearing safe volumes regardless of what you're watching.
Yeah, yeah.
And
none of these gunshots are loud. Why do we even need suppressors?
Exactly. And it reminds me of like people who buy exhausts for their cars based on all the YouTube videos they watched, and then they get it and it never sounds anything like what it does in the YouTube video. Like, they never quite do it justice. So if you can do it in person, I feel like that'd be
pretty clutch. Yeah. I was, I guess, more so just saying, like, if you see someone and you see something repeatedly, like all the time, there's a good chance that it's probably a good product. Like,
yeah.
It's unlike pretty much any other consumer product.
Yeah.
In that, like, a company can't just send it to an influencer and they're going to be like, oh, yeah, they're going to do their thing with it and they're going to send it back. No. Like, if you see a suppressor review, that person either bought it or they're associated with somebody
an employee of a company
or
they're an employee of a company. So I don't know, I would say that getting hands-on time with it is obviously the best thing that you can do, but you can also, you know, get a lot of information about a suppressor by simply looking at it, by, you know, evaluating, okay, like I've shot, you know, this 30 cal suppressor that was 9 inches long and, you know, inch and a half diameter, and it sounded kind of like this, and this is made of the same materials. You're kind of starting to look at, you know, there's a lot of similarities between a lot of suppressors. There's some differences, you know, whether it be attachment method or the material that they're coating it with, or you know.
Or the design of
their
baffles.
Is it a monocore? Is it a, you know, K-baffle system? So, yeah, there's a lot of similarities, but there's fewer differences.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we gotta get into the pistol and rimfire stuff, too, but I feel like, Marco, I went at it. I remember when I was getting suppressors, I did get multiple. I was looking at, there was a couple that were supposed to be the do-all, but then I ultimately got a couple. I went for, like, there's the long, I have a long, really, but pretty lightweight 30 cal hunting can. Mm-hmm. That's more designed. It's not full auto rated because I'm not going to be sending a lot of shots through it. And then there's the Saker, the 308, but like when you look at this thing, it's not bad in size overall, but it's portly.
She's thick.
It's portly. Like it weighs.
Oh, yeah.
it weighs a lot.
You can club a fish with that.
Can I say one thing? Like before we close out that thought on like centerfire rifle cans,
mm-hmm.
I think it's okay to say, you know, I'm going to buy the suppressor and I want to use it on a handful of rifles, and so like. So instead of buying a 223 bore, you buy a 30 cal bore because you want to shoot it on a 6.5 and on a 300 Win Mag and, you know, a few different rifles. The one thing I don't suggest doing is like thinking to yourself, well, I'm buying my first suppressor and I want to make sure that I get one that's going to cover all my needs. Don't go out and buy like a 46 cal bore because someday you might get a tactical lever action, you know, 45 long Colt and you want to shoot subsonics out of it. Like, if you do buy that gun someday, buy a suppressor for that gun, because that big of a difference, you know, going from a 30 cal bore to a 46 cal bore, I mean, you know, it's like set a 416 Barrett and a 223 next to each other and tell me that suppressor is going to be just as good on both. I mean, you can see by the physical size differences in the rounds that it's not the same forces that are happening through as that goes through that suppressor. So
just sounds like it's going to be impractical.
Yeah, and I think more often than not, when people try and like buy a one size fits all product, you end up using it for the thing that you thought you were going to use it for most often, and you really don't. You know, you would never buy something for the 10%. You know, buy it for the 90%.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, you know, just another good spot to do the old 80-20, you know?
Yeah, very much so. And the same thing along those lines with kind of some of the do-all cans or the very modular cans. In rifles, anyway, these cans that get very hot and very, you know, there's a lot of heat cycles and things like that. They are modular to an extent, but at some point, you are going to be committed to a configuration because they are going to start to seize together.
So, oh, yeah, that's right.
So at some point, you're going to not be able to get that adapter off the back or that adapter off the front. Or if you can, it's going to take effort and a vice.
That's just because of all the carbon buildup?
Yeah, just carbon and heat cycles and, you know, I mean, some of it's soft metal that it's made out of, you know, so it just starts to... It just starts to bind together and carbon together, and so like that. Well, that the first can that I bought's a good example. Like, I mean, it kind of is what it is now because I can't really get it apart anymore without being violent. Now, if you have to get violent, it's a hollow tube. Like, you can only get it so tight in a vise,
right,
before you start to crush it. So
I did a 7-year stint in the fastener world, and when I bought my first suppressor, I was like, I got this anti-seize. I'll clean it once in a while. Yeah, that lasted a couple thousand rounds, you know. So it's like, yeah, you are going to get to a point where things are going to start to seize up. You don't necessarily need to clean a suppressor more than once every... I mean, I would just say don't clean centerfire rifle suppressors unless you're shooting cast lead bullets.
Hmm.
And even some of them, like, you can't take them apart enough to do that, because they either have a sealed end cap or a sealed back half or something like that. So even if you want to clean a suppressor, sometimes you really can't.
Mm-hmm.
So I would almost say, like, don't plan to clean your centerfire suppressor one industry guy that works at a suppressor company one time told me, like, if you really, really want to do it, like, take a couple of 30-round mags and heat it up. Like, run them through the gun as fast as you can, heat it up, and, you know, a lot of that stuff will burn out.
I was going to say, you're burning that stuff
who's
off.
Who's doing
then?
That? Today's ammo prices, right? Like, that's pretty costly.
Yeah. Yeah, so they effectively almost self-maintain.
It's very much like an oven. I mean, especially on the rifle cans, they get hot enough that they take care of themselves. Yeah.
And rimfire cans are a totally different animal, right?
Yep.
Because
right.
we're most of the time shooting rimfire ammo that's not plated or jacketed. It's sometimes coated, so it can be a wax coating, or it can be, you know, you could be shooting like a copper plated bullet where it's, you know, it's a very, very thin lubricating coating of copper or something like that, you know, but a lot of times it's just a cast bullet. It's just a non-coated lead bullet.
Yeah.
Might have wax or something, but that's depositing lead now every time it goes through your suppressor, and the exhaust, you know, the gases are dirtier too. So that's coating and caking the inside of your suppressor. So those
wind up needing to be maintained.
Yeah. And that's a tricky thing too, because you can go and you can do, like, you know, put in a sonic cleaner and run it for a while, as long as the you know, your sleeve or your outside jacket can handle the substances that are in a sonic cleaner. But there's also, you know, chemical ways that you can do a mixture of, you know, this and this, but then you're left with lead acetate, which you can't pour that down your drain. You can't pour it in your yard. It has to go to hazardous material dump, like your county dump, your township dump, or something like that.
It's such a pain dealing with all that stuff.
Yeah, and then that actually soaks into your skin too. So it's actually a really, really nasty process for you to even do. So, you know, I tell people, like, get a screwdriver and get that stuff out of there, because if it's not in a gaseous or liquid form, it's going to be a lot less damaging. And put some rubber gloves on and scrape it off.
And you're not going to damage it too ish?
Maybe not. It's the risk you run.
So those are just a little bit trickier, huh? The rimfire suppressors.
What really sells rimfire suppressors is how do they come apart and how do you clean them?
Yeah. Okay. And if you shoot it too much, how easy is it to get apart after I ran it a couple thousand rounds?
When people spread them out on the counter, like, that's one of the main conversations, is how does it come apart?
Yeah.
In, you know, is it a stack of things that go together in a sleeve? Is it a monocore that comes out? What's it made out of?
Since we kind of jumped into this rimfire cans, do you want to kind of go through that too?
Yeah, why not?
I might circle back, because maybe I have just more general suppressor questions, but it's definitely more on the rifle side.
Why not? Man, this is where, talking about rimfire suppressors though, this is where I wish that there wasn't like all these waiting times and tax stamps and crap. They almost just seem like they should be disposable.
They really should.
I actually, you know, there's always this thing that you hear when you talk about suppressors with your, you know, your uncles and your cousins and the group of people at the gun club. It's like, oh yeah, well, in Europe, they're just $10 and you buy them at, like, I don't know that they're that cheap, but there are, in America, and I will say this, like, I know this to be true, in America, suppressors are typically overbuilt. They're very much built to endure a lifetime of use, because this tax stamp is with you forever, right? So even if you want it, the only way to get rid of it is to bring it to the ATF and here you go, I don't want this anymore. You can't sell it. You can't transfer it to a dealer. So here, suppressors are built to last. There are other countries where a suppressor might be, the gun might take you 6 months or a year to get it, but the suppressor's like, yeah, go down to your local hardware, Hank, and get a suppressor. And I have heard from people that I know in those countries that a suppressor, where here we might spend $800 on a titanium core 30 caliber direct threat suppressor, that might be a $250 or $300 suppressor. But when it's done, it's done. And you get a new one.
I can't say which I prefer.
I think I know. You kind of wish,
well,
like,
no, I do know, but I don't like it.
I kind of wish that.
Well, especially you, Mark. You like really nice stuff.
I mean, I wish there was no tax stamp for any of them, right? Like, I wish there was no waiting period for any. It would be nice if you could just say, oh, I want to buy a cheaper suppressor because I'm only going to use it on my, you know,
I mean, for me,
$300 deer rifle once a year.
I flew into my hunt this time. I'm just going to go by the hardware store and get a suppressor, and I don't need the most expensive one.
Yeah.
I'll just grab a cheap one.
So what you can do is, like, nice. I guess the tax stamp, right, is that thing that right now it's our reality that it's here. We have to deal with it. That's part of the process. There are lower cost suppressors. I was looking at Wit Machine, and I want to say under $400 you can buy a little 4-inch 30 caliber suppressor. You still have to pay the tax stamp, right? So mm-hmm. now it's a $600 suppressor, but I think it's under $400, and that's probably not, I don't know, I haven't used it, but to my knowledge, I would imagine there's less material, maybe less machining or less, you know, something with it that makes it that cost. But you can buy lower cost suppressors, but it's not a throw it away item when you're done.
And it's only 4 inches, so I'm sure it doesn't have
sound suppression is probably pretty minimal. Yeah. But nonetheless, like, you know, there are, when we look at rimfire suppressors and I guess any suppressors that can be taken apart, there is a serialized part, right?
Mm-hmm.
And okay. then there are non-serialized parts. My experience is that a lot of rimfire suppressors, the little baffles, if you can take them out, that's not the serialized part. So if you did run into a case where, hey, they're trashed, or I did something, I was cleaning it and I dented it with my screwdriver, you could order those replacement parts.
That's nice.
Okay.
I would say a lot of reputable suppressor manufacturer companies have an eye towards the registered part mm-hmm. is something that could be record or is yeah. just a sleeve or something like that, so they can
this part.
Adapt your product.
Like on this Osprey right here, that's this part right here.
Mm-hmm.
That's not this sleeve. That's not your baffles. That's sure. this rear half that's actually, you can tell, it's the more rigid part of the construction.
It's
not,
the part
not
that'll
our scopes,
stand you know. The test of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like on our scopes, as long as the tube is okay, I mean, our techs can pretty much fix anything else
right.
in that scope.
Yeah.
As long as the tube's okay. But if they get it in and the tube's yeah. bent, they're like, well, you know, that's kind of
right.
You know, goose is cooked on that.
Mine
one.
It for good parts and
yeah.
put them in a new tube.
Is there something about, still speaking on rimfire cans, is there something about them otherwise that's different than a centerfire can? Like like the internal baffle, material and structure?
Yeah,
is
material and construction. Some of them are rated for higher calibers, so some of them are really chasing lightweight, you know, on 22 long rifle specifically. Some are pretty much 22 long rifle cans, but they're rated for the pressures of 17 HMR and what's
the trend right now?
The FN
is
one.
The trend right now is rimfire cans that are 5.7 by 2.8 rated.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
4.6 by 30. The HK MP7 cartridge.
Who has one of those?
I don't know, but that's
he's out there and he wants a can for it.
But that's the. I mean, like our buddies at Amtac suppressors a few years. Do you remember that? That
oh, yeah.
commercial they did where it was like they got a question that where someone was like, is your 22 suppressor full auto rated? And they threaded it onto an AR and shot it, and like five rounds into the full auto burst, it just popped. And they looked at the camera and they're like, nope. So, but I think with rimfire suppressors, you know, my experience with them is, you know, typically you're going to find them, they're modular, they can be taken apart. So, you know, there's a trend right now where you can get a suppressor that has additional baffles so you can get more volume or something
yeah,
like
you
that,
can make
right?
them longer, shorter.
Yeah, yeah, like the mm-hmm. Erector set, like you can just keep threading on baffles that Q suppressor.
Mm-hmm. Like sunshades.
Yeah, there you go.
Too soon, Mark.
But the other thing is you notice a lot of coatings. So there's kind of some new coatings that are being used on the baffles that, you know, I would imagine they're using so that lead and the deposited exhaust doesn't stick to them as well, or so that you might be able to clean them easier.
Sure.
But, yeah, I mean, you're going to see more aluminum used in rimfire suppressors typically because they're it's lighter, it's, you know, less cost, easier to machine, stuff like that. So you do see a lot less steel, maybe the nut that threads onto the barrel, but, you know, the sleeve or the baffles, a lot of aluminum, a lot of titanium, some Inconel. But more often than not, you'd see these rimfire suppressors. Like the standard is kind of like 3.5 to 4.5 inches, about an inch or so in diameter, and made of a lightweight material where these cans are, you know, 3 to 5 ounces, something like that.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like with a rimfire suppressor too, the stakes aren't as high
Yeah.
Because you're suppressing something that's, especially if you're just shooting 22 long rifle. I mean, you're shooting something that's pretty borderline hearing safe to begin with. And then if you stick something on the end of it, you know, as long as, like you said, that's probably why most people are concerned with, you know, well, how do I clean it? You know, more the down and dirty maintenance type stuff, because you're like, I'm sure it's going to make this thing hearing safe.
Your decibel rating on a rimfire can, it doesn't have a lot of work to do, so that's why the volume is smaller. But also, I mean, that they make you giggle when, like, that's how loud it is, especially on a bolt action or something where you can keep the action closed. That it's like that. Like, it's like the sound of the hammer dropping is the sound of the can a lot of times.
That's literally
so awesome.
You get into rimfire pistols, it can be a little louder, but a lot of times, if you shoot standard velocity ammo out of a standard length barrel, you know, 10/22 or bolt action, you know, rifle, that powder is all burned before that bullet exits. So you're not dealing with a lot of, you know, unburnt powder that pop. You're dealing with just that supersonic crack and a little bit of pressure behind the bullet.
How about pistol cans? While we're making our way through, and then Mark has his general suppressor questions, but how about these? So we have, like we mentioned earlier, we have an Osprey here, which is actually kind of a unique one. This isn't like a super common pistol can,
It's a very successful can.
Right, but it's not like your typical just cylinder.
Correct, yes.
So it's a super cool one that I actually got a while back. My approach to it was to get like one can for each use. I wasn't actually even seeing guns so much as like I knew I wanted a hunting can, a can that could go on ARs, a kind of do it all can just in case to mop up the rest, and then a rimfire can and a pistol can. And I was like, if I have those, would I make that five? I should be pretty good for anything, unless I'm the guy who goes out and gets the lever action, some big 40 something cal, whatever. And
then practical.
But you know, unless I go out and
that
do something super crazy.
That actually strikes me as something you would do, Jim.
By the way, how come you don't have that yet?
good question. Unless I do something super crazy, I was pretty much covered across the board. And so anyways, that's what we have here. Funny enough, like you guys were talking about, the one that I got as my catch-all, do-all can or whatever was the Saker 7.62. Because I was like, I can just kind of like, switch out the back half, switch out stuff, plop it on anything. It's the one that has been used the least.
Right.
That is interesting.
But anyway, I did get this thing, though, to go on pistols. And pistol suppressors, I remember all my other ones I got, and it was kind of like, well, this is easy. You get the suppressor, you get, if it needs it, a muzzle brake to go on the gun that you're going to put it on, and then you just kind of like put it on. Pistol suppressors were a little weird. This one took me a little bit of like asking people questions and trying to make sure that I was getting the right parts to actually make it work with my pistol. Most of it had to come down to, I didn't realize you don't just direct thread it on and go necessarily out of the box. Like there's little things like this booster. What did you call it earlier, Rube?
Nielsen device.
There's stuff like that. Maybe you guys, why don't you guys just jump into pistol suppressors though?
I'll say a couple things and then pass it over to you because you've sold a lot more of them than I have, right? So I will say that I think when you ask somebody about suppressors, probably the first thing that comes to their mind is, it's like an assassin's tool, right? You see it on pistols in James Bond. Like it's a movie suppressor is almost always on a pistol, maybe a sniper rifle here and there, but like it's typically portrayed as like you thread it on, right? Well, they're really hard to holster and they get hot. So when you reholster them, they either melt your holster or they burn through your pants and burn your leg. So
that's just problematic when you're trying to be like a super cool assassin.
Yeah.
Pistol suppressors are the suppressors that I think you see the least.
In real life.
But my first suppressor was a pistol suppressor. Like, and now I thread it on a PCC because I actually use it more often. But like you mentioned, I mean, you have to have some applications, not all of them, but on like a falling block, like on a Glock where the barrel unlocks and drops down to come out a battery to start your kind of your ejection and your slide cycling process. Well, that Nielsen's device or that booster is like a spring piston inside so that when that barrel does unlock, this will actually pull out a little bit to follow the barrel because that barrel is pulling back. So it doesn't put as much up stress or down stress on the barrel when the barrel unlocks and then locks.
Mm-hmm.
So it adds life to the suppressor and it doesn't wear out your threads as fast. But yeah, I mean, I think pistol suppressors are probably like you think of it first when you think of suppressors, but then you use it the least. I've used mine exactly 3 times in 4 years, probably.
Yeah.
5 years.
Well, and like you said, in the movies, too, it's like always like in the moment, they're like, oh, time to go do work. You know,
time
and
to
they
go dark.
Thread it right on.
Yeah, but in the movies, they're going back to that whole disposable sort of nature that we were talking about earlier, right? Because you go do whatever clandestine operation you got to do, and then you like throw it in a river or something. You don't need to worry about it holstering it, and the river will cool it
prices.
Down.
Exactly. Seven years of waiting in the river.
I got this one, though. I remember when I was looking around at pistol suppressors, because I believe, is this the one where you could also pop it on like a 300 blackout or something?
I think it will do 300 blackout subsonic pressures.
Subsonic. Yeah. Okay. Got it.
Yeah, Adam, what do you got on
pistol Well, the big thing on this one is that the, for those watching on YouTube, the bore is offset to the can. So when you thread a big expansion chamber on the front of a pistol, all of a sudden you couldn't see over your sights.
Right.
So one of the thoughts behind this one is they offset the bore so that it has a large volume underneath. But you had more clearance for your sights.
Yeah.
Which is why this particular can was very popular in the pistol suppressor world.
Hence the reason why there is a term suppressor height sights.
Yes.
Super tall sights to get over that big can.
Yep.
Yeah, and you look at a lot of, I mean, a lot of the guns that we were kind of exposed to that had suppressors on them were like, you know, like a Mark 23, right? Like HK, big 45 polymer frame gun, but with a big old suppressor on there. They were shooting, you know, 230 hardball or something like that. And
the direct action pistol.
Pretty sweet, like video game pistol, and then you shoot it in real life, and you're kind of like, yeah, once
really,
is enough.
I really want a stock and a foregrip.
Yeah. Then you get a UMP. Yeah. But yeah, no, I think a lot of times you don't just take the same rifle can and thread it on a pistol with a thread adapter, right?
Yeah.
Because our bore on a 9mm is like a 355 bore. So looking at like that, like a hybrid 46 or something, where that's a 46 cowboy, you might be able to take that suppressor and put a booster in it and now shoot it on your Glock, but now it's not really optimized for anything. It just kind of does everything.
Yeah.
Yep. And then
I'll just say yes on that part.
And then it comes back to pistols, they're shooting slow moving bullets with slow burning dirty powder, so they usually have to be cleaned. They don't get very hot compared to rifle cans. Still don't touch them after you're done shooting. But they don't get hot enough to clean themselves, so that, you know, serviceability is usually a thing. And then I think the other thing, and maybe you got exposed to this a little bit, is all threaded barrels for whatever pistol you might be trying to go to are like all over the map. So like there are all kinds of thread adapters.
Yes,
you got to be sure you have the right one.
I couldn't figure that was what got me, because I think I had four.
Yeah,
and I was. Does this one work? No. Does it?
Anything German seems to be left hand thread.
Yep.
45 versus 9mm. It's all over the place.
Yeah, we're not trying to scare people out of buying a pistol suppressor by any means.
No.
I mean, it is one of those things where it's, I think you'd be pretty confident if you walked into a dealer and you're like, hey, I want to buy that X rifle. It's got, you know, this threaded barrel, I need a suppressor for it. And there's a pretty good chance that whatever suppressor you pick for that, it's like, as long as it threads up and the bore is bigger than the bullet you're shooting, it's going to work.
Yeah.
Pistols, there's a little more to know, right? Like a little bit more homework to go with.
Yeah. But to be terribly honest, just because that's how we are, like, I mean, pistols are a big part of my life and yours as well. I would say we probably shoot more pistol rounds a year than anything else. Don't have one of these.
I haven't shot a suppressor on my pistol in at least 3 years.
Yep. No boating accidents or anything. Just don't have one.
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, it's not very applicable. I mean, you can't use it for daily carry. You know, concealed carry needs not apply.
Yeah.
Action shooting sports needs not apply. You know, so it's very kind of, you know, they're good for plinking, and there's all kinds of purposes for them. But like outside, most people who shoot pistols a lot don't have an application for this.
Yeah.
In the way that you generalize, we use rifle suppressors.
You could kind of almost say too, like in the competitive shooting, action shooting world for pistols, there's really no place for suppressors because they add size and weight.
Yep.
And it's just a little.
Well, you're even talking about just the cumbersome nature of holstering or something like that. I'm trying to picture, like, okay, well, how do I you know, if you're going to carry or something like that, like that.
No, yeah. You get the right combination, though. Like, there's, like, Brota M983 or something, and you thread a suppressor on there. That's cool. Like, it's a cool gun to shoot.
That is.
It's not as cool when you have to holster it, but, you know, standing at, I mean,
I remember
one time we were back out at the farm and we were shooting pistols with suppressors on. It's fun. Like, it's a ton of fun.
Yeah.
Might not be as practical, but it's fun.
Pistols are very suppressible because the bullets are at or near supersonic speed.
Yep.
Now, pistol caliber suppressors, when you get into sub guns, game changer. Like that Kalashnikov that you have, you know, that thing, super fun with the cam on it.
Yeah, that is a good
MP5, perfect example.
And then like you don't have to worry. Then you don't have to worry about the boosters and all that stuff.
No,
you can just get whatever adapters necessary.
That bad boy
directly
down there.
Not a reciprocating barrel of any type. Like the barrel's fixed, so you're not worried about that can, you know, being jolted up or jolted down or back. Mm-hmm. Like that Nielsen device isn't needed.
Yeah.
So the other thing, that Nielsen device is probably anywhere from 1 to 3 ounces, so you're adding weight too, and you can take that off. One of the cans that I've used for a long time is a Omega 9K. That was like one of the first suppressors I bought, and that has, you know, I can thread the back end off and put a quick attach on. So if I want to run it on sub guns, I can do that. If I want to put a Nielsen device in, I can run it on a pistol. It's a very versatile can. It's kind of one of those suppressors I think is actually kind of an outlier. It's one of the suppressors that you can put on a lot of different things.
And that one in particular was so good and so successful. So versatile that a lot of other companies had to come up with their version of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So solid buy.
Yep.
If you're a person that you're like, oh man, I really like to shoot a lot. Maybe I like, you know, I really like ARs. Maybe you're doing a variety of things, but you're like, I just want it to be quiet. Like, is a suppressed PCC, is that like a great way to go? Like, you can,
if you're chasing quiet, again, it's kind of like, well, what are you trying to do with the gun? You know?
Right.
So like, if you don't need something specific terminal ballistics wise from a gun, I mean, PCCs are probably some of the most suppressible guns there are. They're working on a blowback, so there's no porting of gases pretty much until the bullet is gone.
You can get a little more port crack in a gun, you know, port crack just being on a direct blowback action. You know, think of like a Ruger PC carbine or a 9mm AR or something like that, where there's no locking mechanism on the bolt. As soon as that bullet fires, the bullet's moving forward, but that kind of equal and opposite reaction, the bolt's moving backwards at the same time. So some of that unburnt powder can come as soon as that bolt opens enough. You can, you know, the bolt theoretically is open as the bullet's leaving. So some of that unburnt gas comes back through the port. That's called port crack.
Okay.
And you can have a little higher likelihood of that with some of those guns, but, you know, in something with a locking design like an MP5 or, you know, like a CMMG Banshee, I believe, where they do have like some sort of locking mechanism. Yeah. Stupid quiet.
Yeah. So some
it
guns.
It just sounds fun and pleasant.
I mean, Mark, though, like speaking of ARs and stuff, I mean, you heard my AR that we had on that coyote hunt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that thing was. I don't know if part of the reason was just because of the heightened awareness of the fact that there was a coyote that popped up there, but I mean, almost, I didn't even notice it when it went off.
You know, and we recorded that, and like, it's not like, bam, you know?
No.
And getting back to, you know, you're like, oh, Mark, you're thinking about a suppressor. We were in that scenario. I knew Jim had a suppressor, and I had that 6.5 Creed with the big break on the end.
Yes.
And
the big shouty thing.
And I love shooting things. I love hunting. I love coyote hunting. I'm there like, man, I hope Jim gets a shot, because I didn't want to, you know what I mean? Like, I even had, you know, hearing protection in, but it was just going to be louder and pleasant. Like I said, I've been trying to be better about protecting my ears.
Well, and you
not
had
all
to,
the time.
You had to have hearing protection in, which sucked. I mean,
right.
Because you were trying to hear, at first we were trying to hear, like, do we get the Fox Pro working up and, you know, or whatever? You got to pull that out. And they're like, oh, I got to put it back in because the coyotes might be coming. But then we're trying to communicate. So you got to pull it out again and hear whatever somebody else is saying. Put it back in case you got to take a shot. And,
well, and then
the whole time I was just there, like, ready when they are.
But then it's like, then it forces you, you know, here you are being a responsible citizen with a suppressor, but then I'm not. And, like, it forces you to probably have hearing protection or, you know, make some sort of compromises or, I don't know.
Well, you talked about this in the last Why Suppressed episode, but I haven't hunted, with the exception of shotgun, you know, bird hunting, I haven't hunted without a suppressor in 6 years.
Yeah.
Likewise.
And like I won't go back. Like unless there's some law that says I can't have it in a certain state to hunt with, I won't not have one. And I think you know, a few years ago I kind of bit on that suppressed muzzleloader thing, right? And so like even went as far as like, yeah, I'm gonna get a suppressed muzzleloader because that actually
because
didn't require a tax stamp. That was a moderator, right? So it's threaded on a gun. It's threaded on a muzzleloader that wasn't classified by the ATF as a firearm, so it's not a firearm accessory. So that was just part of the gun. And while I haven't hunted with it as much, it's like that was kind of part of like my mental like dedication to suppressed hunting was that like, I'm hunting, like I'm hunting suppressed.
It's so much nicer.
Not to get it, you know, you could like I could beat this dead horse all day, but like just from like a practicality standpoint, I feel like it's somebody like saying like, you want hearing protection? Well, that's going to be a problem.
That could be dangerous.
And I actually, you know, what's funny is this is a stat that I heard the other day too. The average 223 AR with a 16-inch barrel and a suppressor, the sound of the gun is actually a little bit. It's like 1 decibel above a jackhammer.
Hmm.
So, like with a typical 223 suppressor, with a suppressor. It's still as loud as a jackhammer. So
there's probably OSHA laws that say you have to wear hearing protection when you're using a jackhammer.
Yeah, so you get fined if you don't use it there, and you get fined if you use it illegally.
Maybe
here.
That's our answer. Somehow we should petition OSHA into saying that suppressors are mandatory.
I think the Hearing Protection Act that was kind of pushed a few years ago, that you know that was the main reasoning, was that like Americans deserve the right to protect their hearing.
Yeah, for sure. Mark, getting back to like which suppressor to pick though. What else is there in your mind as a suppressor shopper? What are you looking at? Obviously, there's all these different kinds, like we said before. I mean, essentially what it boils down to is a lot of what do you want to use it for? And then in that case, then would that require a maximum suppression, or would it require super light and handy and small, or... Where are you at?
For me, you know, maybe the best of both worlds, right? But as much as that exists, but you know, and you brought up earlier, Jim, like you know, one or two, like I think I could realistically get by with two. I think I'd want a 30 cal and I'd want one for my 5.56, and that's going to cover
which
the guns
Mark has now.
Theoretically, you know, I mean, the undocumented boating accident.
Sorry, so. If I had to make
really
a suggestion,
build a better boat,
yeah, that's the answer here.
Fool me once.
How many is that now? Four? If I had to make a suggestion to what I would call the rational consumer of gun owners who, you know, might have an AR, you know, Mark, you're part of that group now. They've got a rimfire, a couple ARs, some hunting bolt guns, right? My thing would be like, get a direct thread 30 caliber suppressor first. Mm-hmm. That's my thing. Like, this is my suggestion. Get a direct thread 30 cal suppressor, something fairly lightweight, something not too cumbersome.
Yep.
That you've got a few rifles that have, you know, that are threaded for that same diameter. You can thread them on and off. Then get a rimfire suppressor. Okay. Like rimfire suppressors are the most fun of any suppressor you can get. Like pistol suppressors are fun, but rimfire, that's just stupid quiet. It's so much fun. And then go and get, you know, a suppressor with some sort of quick attach method for your ARs that, you know, if you needed to, you could put on, you know, another type of gun too. You know, you can add muzzle devices and quickly switch. But the thing that's hard for me is to recommend like a one size fits all suppressor, because, you know, even if you look at this one, you've got these, you need a spanner wrench to take these two, this end cap off the back, right? I've got a couple of suppressors that do that, and you know, once you do that 10 to 15 times, all of a sudden it starts getting marred up, and you get, you know, and like if you didn't get a good purchase on it when you did it, you kind of start to strip out some of those teeth. And like, I've gotten to the point now where even the suppressors I have that I could switch between multiple guns, I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to leave that one that way and save up for a different suppressor if I truly actually need one.
I mean, it's almost like we keep bringing them rifle scope analogies, but like, you know, it's like, oh, you get a rifle scope, you top it with something. Sure, I could put it on 100 different guns if I wanted, right? But it's sighted in, it's there, it's mounted, it's working properly.
Yeah.
I like it, you know, and that is kind of how I view a suppressor. Like, I'd actually like to build a new 300 short mag, 300 WSM gem. And
you've gone full WSM.
I have, but I'm sensitive to the backlash.
Hey, Texas, you win. You did it.
Don't cave to them.
Hey, easy.
Credit
easy.
Where credit's due.
They're going to be mansplaining winter to us for like 10 years
I'll
now.
I'll still be wisdom over here. We'll even each other out.
Exactly.
I stand with Jim.
The yin and yang. But I actually kind of want to build a gun for that, probably a little bit shorter barrel to accommodate the fact that I'm going to be, you know, essentially lengthening the firearm with the suppressor. And I put a premium on weight. I want to keep it as lightweight as possible and quiet. I don't, like you said, I don't care about full auto. I don't care about like some wild, you know, rating, a decibel rating. Like, you know, so I want a lighter weight suppressor and I want it to be quiet. And that actually is a question that I had because I was actually talking to somebody about suppressors the other day. And I was like, what about this one? What about this one? And they're like, well, that's a good one. But those guys actually don't place a precedence on, or as much a precedence maybe compared to some other ones on the sound suppression. And like in my head, I was like, what? I thought that's like the main thing that these were for. So I guess that's my question. Like,
they're not chasing decibels is probably what he meant.
They're not chasing decibels. Yeah. But like, frankly, I think I'm, or maybe I don't, but I feel like I want the one that's chasing decibels. Well, cause like the, particularly for like a first round pop, you know, you hear about first round pop. We've talked about that before. Well, hopefully I'm only firing one shot in this scenario. So I actually care about the one that's going to be the most quiet on the first round.
Here's something to keep in mind. If you're concerned about first round pop, and this is kind of actually a little bit more of a universal suppressor kind of, I don't know what I would say. It's a truth, I guess. It's an accepted fact. Mm-hmm. Typically suppressors that have like a K-baffle system or something where they have these baffles that are welded together, you know, they'll have a lower reduced first round pop than something that's a monocore suppressor. So that's two different types of suppressors. One that has, you know, these baffles that are inserted into a tube, or they're welded together to create a baffle stack. You've got suppressors too, like a lot of pistol suppressors, like this Osprey, I believe, would be actually like a monocore. So they're taking a piece of material, machining out. Monocore suppressors typically will have more first round pop.
Gotcha.
So if you're if you are going for that sound suppression on your first round, maybe think of a, you know, typical like a baffle stack type suppressor.
Gotcha. And that's something that would be common for like a 30 cal direct thread type suppressor?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they may have good first round pop numbers, but you know, running a full sound protocol on them, that signature of that can might not be good over the span of 10 shots or 20 shots, but it has a really good first round pop. And I think the other thing, maybe I'm not sure who that manufacturer was, but some of them also, when they say like, well, we're not chasing decibels, what else could they be chasing? They could be trying to hit a range of suppression. And when they're inside of that, they're looking at other characteristics. And I know some of those companies that are making cans that are targeted towards rifles, like you're talking about, they want things like accuracy of the rifle or repeatability of zero when you attach and detach the suppressor. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they're starting to look at things like that. It's like, okay, we checked the box. We got the reduction we want. Now we need a can that has less than a half a minute shift when we take it on and take it off.
Yep.
Or, you know, we need a can that has, you know, it doesn't increase or decrease, you know, the groups of a rifle by an appreciable amount.
Okay. So there's like more to suppressors than just how many decibels does it reduce?
Yeah,
to?
There could be a suppressor that, you know, makes, I think a lot of this has to do with like how much it's dampening your barrel, or if you're, you know, the load that you're shooting, if it's in a certain node and then you put something out on the end of the gun, it can change that node due to harmonics,
right? Like a barrel weight.
Yeah. It's a tuner, right? So it's, you're adding this dampener or this thing that's changing the harmonics of the barrel. So like some suppressors will claim that they have no appreciable shift where your zero moves from here to here.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's suppressors that claim that they don't change your accuracy. So they say your group won't open up, right? But it might shift.
Right.
So what are we chasing? So, you know, a guy that's, you know, a SOCOM operator might have a huge desire to not have a zero shift when he takes a suppressor on and off, but the accuracy might not be the thing. The zero shift might be the thing, or the noise might not be the thing. So there's all these little trade-offs that can be like, well, this suppressor is 7 inches long and this one's 9 inches long. This one's 8 ounces. This one's 14 ounces. Like, what's important to you? So if you're like looking to get a suppressor, like, you really do have to make this list of what's your top priority.
Yeah.
Is it price? Because you might not have as much of a say in all these other things then. Well, if it's weight, well, then you might not, you know, you might be stuck with a certain type of material. If it's length, okay, then we might not get it as quiet as you want. There's a lot of different things mm-hmm. that, but you do, like, I firmly believe you have to pick your top priority and then go down from there.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. And like, you know, again, I feel like, at least in my head, I've done that to a degree. Like, I don't really care if I take it on and off. Like, I don't, like, as far as like POI shift, like on, off, like mm-hmm. I'm probably going to leave it on. Like, I don't see swapping it out a lot, you know, like, I'm going to sight it in. Like, if I was hunting, you know, if we're coyote hunting or I was even going to Alaska or whatever, I'm going to sight it in with the suppressor on. I'm going to put it in the case with the suppressor on, and I'm going to go hunting.
There's no, like, man, I can't think of any reason. I was trying to think of that, too. Like, I personally wouldn't be taking it on and off a whole lot. I mean, it's not like when you check it and you fly with an airplane or whatever, you're, you know,
they don't
when you check it.
Well, like, just yesterday we had a customer here, a law enforcement customer. Their guns have to fit in a certain size box.
Okay.
So they have to take their suppressor off every time they put it in their car.
So, yeah, they have a different set of needs
and
there,
that,
for sure.
That suppressor had first-round pop numbers. It had repeatability of attachment-detachment numbers. It had, you know, it's full auto-rated, and it's all those things. Except when you put it, one specimen out of a department, when they put it on the gun, made a one-minute AR-10. An 8-minute AR-10.
Oh.
Just the way that one worked out.
Yikes.
And that's not something... Is that something that you can predict ahead of time? Like, well, I'm looking at this suppressor. It looks like it's got this, 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 and this. But, ooh, not having bought it yet, I can see that my accuracy wouldn't be as good with it. Or that's just something you got to roll the dice and be
that,
like,
that
I'm
one, that
try
one's
this.
Kind of roll of dice because they had four other specimens that didn't do that.
You might be... You might look at suppressors... Let's just say you go to... you know, go to silencershop.com or Silencer Central or whoever you're looking at. You might be like, oh, look at, there's 40 brands here on the side. How do I decide which brand to look at? You might research some of those companies, and you would find that a company like, well, Thunderbeast, they, above all, they advertise that their suppressors don't have a POI shift and that it'll either keep your accuracy or it'll make it better.
Yep.
Okay.
That's their platform that they stand on, like, to my knowledge.
Yep.
Again,
and they'll
that's
tell
what
you right to your face, not full auto rated.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, then you got a company like Silencer Co. Silencer Co. has, for a long time, to me, it's looked like that they want to be the most modular. They want to be able to, and you know, they're also the ones that kind of really push that, the normalizing of suppressors. And so, like, getting more people in the market, that's kind of been the thing I've seen from them. Dead Air, I've seen from them, like, durability and a really good attachment system. So you'll start to, as you look at these different brands, and I'm not promoting any one or the other, but I'll say, like, you will find in this world where you look and all of a sudden it's like, I got 40 decisions to make. Like, which brand suppressor do I make? Well, start filtering those down. You might find that you only have 3 decisions to make, right? So it might not be as complicated as it seems, but you do kind of want to be like, what's the hill I'm going to die on? Like, is it accuracy? Is it point of impact shift? Is it how quick I can attach it and detach it? Is it cost? Is it size? Is it weight? Those are some of the things to really look at. And you might find that you don't truly have as many decisions to make as you think you do.
Like, I think even for both my rifles, accuracy, size, weight. Those are my 3 considerations.
Well, and sound suppression.
But
I feel like that, I mean... No, it's not a given when it comes to suppressors, because you do get some of those ones that are like those ultra mega short guys that go on the end of 5.56 ARs and probably still don't even make them hearing safe, but they at least cover up some blast. I'm sure.
Well, it's targeted at an application.
Right. So, but what I'm getting at is that I was going to say, you know, well, you're getting a suppressor, so I'm sure at the very least it'll make it hearing safe. It's not necessarily guaranteed, I suppose. But, I mean, at least it's going to make it better than it was.
Yeah.
Adam and I play a lot with the K-sized suppressors. Like, that's kind of like the thing we've been, I don't know, it seems like at least, maybe the thing we've been getting into as we continue to have our roles here at Vortex, like, whether we be you know, doing a demo for a law enforcement group, or yep. we're here with a customer, a lot of times we find ourselves messing around with these like little shorty suppressors.
And what do you like about those?
Well, I think that you would look at that, and if you compared that to, you know, a full size suppressor, you'd be like, well, that sucks. Like, that's louder. It's heavy, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're doing shoot house stuff in the stack, like, I can tell you that your buddy in front of you is going to appreciate it, because it's going to reduce down that blast, and it's going to make it so that he doesn't lose all of his hearing.
Yeah,
you
right.
know, well, like, yeah, and it's compact, right? So you can still maneuver it. So those are all decisions.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, he'll also appreciate it. Not getting stuck in the back by an 8-inch suppressor.
Yeah.
Also, is that yes. a suppressor, or are you just really excited for this room clear?
But yeah, I mean, those bring the blast down to an acceptable threshold without ruining the handling characteristics of the gun. Yeah. So it's not like, yeah. wow, that's heavy. And, yeah. you know, but at the same time, and then, you know, they're full auto rated and all that stuff. So they can heat up, and they can stay heated up for a while. Cause, like, we're not doing machine gun shoots. But if you go to a range day at like a Trigger Con or something like that, where a gun pretty much gets shot 10 rounds, 5 to 10 rounds every 2 to 10 minutes, like, that can is going to be hot all day. So you yeah. start to need full auto rated on stuff.
I heard
like
a statistic
that,
so. That like on an AR, typically every round can increase the temperature of the suppressor 10 to 15 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So if you start out at ambient temperature, you know, 70 degrees in the summer, 80 degrees in the summer, you know, by one magazine in, that thing's 350, 400 degrees, right? So they get hot. And so
yes.
that's what Adam's kind of getting to, is that like those shorter cans, there's less material there.
Mm-hmm.
They might heat up a little faster, but they cool down faster.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. and there's also not as much material deflection, because they're, as they heat up, they can, you know, start to stress relieve, right?
Okay.
Fun fact for folks at home, K stands for Kurz, which is German.
Not compact.
Yeah. A lot of German influence, or homage to German designs in the suppressor world. So that's where the K comes from. It's used by tons Kurz. Of companies. Yep. But generally, K stands for the short one.
Noted.
Huh. Fun fact.
If you get a really big, fat suppressor, do they call it F for Fram? Homage to the oil,
I couldn't
filter.
Say for certain. Couldn't
well,
say
there
for
is
sure.
an adapter. There is an oil filter adapter that you can buy that you
probably instantly makes you a felon, right?
No, it has a serial number. You tax. You do.
Oh,
a,
okay.
You buy it as a suppressor, but you thread on an oil filter. So, I mean, you have to follow the same legal procedures, right?
Or following the rules.
But you thread on an oil filter, and that's your disposable little suppressor. You do have to shoot the first hole through it, so
mm-hmm.
your first round accuracy isn't real great from what I've heard. But yeah, that
a little unpredictable.
There's your Fram reference.
There you go. What do you guys recommend Mark look at? Accuracy, size, weight,
and well, I mean, sound and first round pop.
Ruben dropped this brand already, but Thunderbeast. You're a quintessential Thunder Beast customer
okay.
for what they're making. And then what's those other ones you have on the Experience?
Oh, the real lightweight ones?
Yeah.
We have some Stinger Works cans.
Yeah, those are cool too.
Those are neat. Those are like 9-10 ounces. Lightweight Dave likes that one.
Oh, big fan. Those are the titanium ones, right?
Yep, the titanium.
I was just going to ask, titanium,
they
that
have
sounds
a,
my speed.
They have titanium. A titanium blast chamber where your initial blast happens, but then they actually have aluminum baffles and aluminum sleeve. I've played a lot with the Wyoming Arms. They're really small. They're 4 to 5 inches long, but those are, you know, that thing at 4 ounces is, you know, it makes that shot, especially out in the open prairie. It makes that first round on a hunt or something very, very manageable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you will not, to my knowledge, you won't see, you know, significant issues with hearing. And then, you know, I guess I've looked at, It's not small and lightweight, but I've used a Dead Air Sandman TI as my main hunting suppressor for a long time, and it's quiet. It's not lightweight, but it's quiet.
Mm-hmm. It's so nice. He bought it twice.
There you go. No.
That's true. I've heard you mention that one numerous times.
Dude, it's just, I've got tens of thousands of rounds through it. I've threaded it on a ton of different guns. And it's never let me down.
He's being modest. He's a big fan of Sandman
Ties. Simple.
All right. Now, if the person isn't Mark and they're a general enthusiast who does a little bit of everything, maybe they don't get necessarily one, but they have the budget to get like two or three. What would they get?
I mean, that depends on who they are.
They do literally everything. Sometimes they shoot competition, sometimes they hunt, sometimes they plank.
Well, I think here's something to think about too. If
mostly center fire.
If you so we'll just say this. If you're shooting ARs and you don't buy the piston ARs, OSS is a really good brand.
You have to look at OSS.
The suppressors are extremely freaking durable, and while their decibel rating numbers aren't going to be the reason why people would select it from the drop down list, their tone's really good, and they don't have very much blowback in a gas gun, right?
Okay.
So that
the technology makes a lot of sense.
Yep,
we use a lot of them.
Yep, I would say rimfire suppressors anywhere from. I mean, actually, I think rimfire suppressors are pretty easy, but there's just a lot of options. I've messed with Dead Air. I've messed with Silencer Co. Surefire, like OSS, Liberty suppressors, like a lot of really good rimfire options on the market.
I didn't mean to put you guys on the spot with like name drops.
That's okay. Oh,
for any suppressor friends, a company friends out there, somehow.
We're pretty much friends with all of them.
I know.
So.
We don't want to ever not mention one, but.
Yeah, no, but I mean, like, these are also coming from, like, personal experience. So, right,
yeah.
It's not a Vortex endorsement of this one. This is just what I have experience with.
Yeah.
So, based off of purchasing history and stuff like that. So, yeah, if you see a lot of good reviews about it, and you see a lot of people using it, you know, ask questions. But it's a buy once, cry once item. And so you don't typically see people, you know, using stuff that is subpar.
I'll throw one out there that I wish I would have gotten two of. I wish I would have gotten two of instead of one of them and then one of these, like the Saker. I wish I would have just gotten two harvesters from Silencer Co.
Yeah.
Like the 30 cal harvester. It's a pretty sweet can.
It's a great can. Mm-hmm.
Because it's semi-auto rated, if I'm not mistaken. You can shoot it on a semi-auto. And it's a 30 cal can. I put it on all my hunting guns because it's not terribly heavy.
Hmm.
But then in you know, should you need it, you could put it on like a 308 AR-10 or something like that. Now it's lighter weight, so I'm sure that it probably would heat up quicker and maybe give you some more like mirage off the suppressor and stuff in your scope.
Yeah.
But
I don't personally, this isn't my personal experience, but like there's some suppressors out there too that are incorporating like a more of a, I wouldn't call it a quick attach mount, but I definitely wouldn't call it a direct thread, you know, mounts that have taper, like lock.
It's an Acme thread to a taper shoulder.
Yeah. And so you'll see some suppressors out there that are, you know, either threaded for that, they come with it, or they can be adapted to like a taper lock. So it's not necessarily a direct thread. It's not a quick attach, but it's somewhere in the middle where you hand thread it on, but it's only a certain amount of threads. You're not sitting there spinning it on all day. So there's some good options on the market for that. Yeah. That Omega 9K, you can throw it on a centerfire rifle. You can throw it on
Throw that one on a centerfire.
Yeah, you know, they don't recommend it because the decibel rating isn't great, but durability wise, it's very very durable can. So you're not going to wreck it. I've hunted with it. It knocks the sound down to a very manageable level. But then you can take that, put a booster in it, a Nielsen vise, thread it on a pistol, and then throw a direct thread mount on it. Thread it on a, you know, on a MP5 or a subgun. I've got one of those Kalashnikov KP9s. You can switch it to, I mean, they're super, super, like we said earlier, it's kind of an outlier. It's one of those cans that you can do a lot of stuff with.
That's cool.
And if you got an AK, you got to get a Wolverine. So
AK, very hard to suppress.
DBS one.
And if you don't have an AK, you got to get an AK.
Yeah.
They're very hard to suppress.
Yeah. Kind of like Ruben was talking before with the port pop. Well, that happens with an AK at the gas block.
Yep.
So you have a suppressor on the front, but all the noise comes out around the piston.
But then what is a suppressor designed for an AK do that others don't?
They're a little bit, I mean, they're kind of a compromise.
Concentricity.
But they're definitely targeted towards the threading issues of comm block manufactured stuff.
Yeah, guns coming out of third world countries are comm block, like, you know, old guns that are the threading is not necessarily concentric to the bore, so they'll actually go to like a bigger, it's an oversized bore diameter on the suppressor, so you have a lower likelihood of baffle strikes.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's a huge thing. I'll say one thing. One thing also, if you're getting into the suppressor world, you know, look at places like Silencer Shop and Silencer Central. I mean, there's tons of great dealers out there all across the country that sell suppressors. You know, some of these places too, like the Silencer Shop kiosk is really neat because, well, like Mark said initially, right, like that paperwork is just, it's daunting. Like, what if I screw it up? What if I do it wrong? You know, what you're going to do is like, you basically go into, you know, make a profile. It's going to do your photos. It's going to do all of your address and everything like that. And you buy a suppressor. And then the next time you buy a suppressor, it saves all of it. So you walk into a shop, you buy a suppressor, and it automatically sends your completed paperwork in. So you don't even have to do anything. You can DocuSign it from home, actually.
That's so the answer.
I like that.
And I think that maybe that speaks to why, like I said earlier, like it sounds like over half the suppressors bought in this country are bought via a kiosk like that, and they're all over the place. So
when you're talking about pictures, what pictures?
You need to do a passport. Face. You need to do a passport photo when you buy a suppressor.
Can you do like a fun Snapchat filter?
No. In fact, it has to literally be. You can't even smile,
Mark. Why don't you try it? You can't smile. No. But
wow, you can't smile. Really,
you can't smile on a passport photo. Apparently.
Yeah, I try and
Jason Bourne. I might have to go back and redo mine.
But yeah, Silencer Shop, Silencer Central, those places have the real automated, easy checkout way to do it. So, I mean, like I said, that first time takes a little bit longer,
mm-hmm.
but it's not much longer.
But then you're kind of done when you're done.
But then you can go on, add to cart, ship it to your local FFL, go in when you get your tax stamp. There is still, you know, that waiting period, but few suppressors are cool.
There's becoming less and less excuses.
If I were terribly honest, my wife showed me a W-4 this morning before I came into work she wanted help with. I was far more intimidated by that form than I am by form 4 for the ATF.
There might be familiarity difference there too.
That's because Adam looks at the form 4 or form 1 and goes, yeah, this. And then it gets to the ATF, they're like, yeah, it's Adam, it's fine.
Yeah.
Second time this month.
I was like, whoa, dependence, what? I don't know.
The ATF, you know, like, while I will say that there can be some pain in doing that paperwork, it sounds like, from what I've heard around the industry, is that the ATF is trying to streamline things a little bit. So right now, I know, like, let's just say 4 months ago, you did a form 4 for a suppressor and you do another one now. If they haven't processed your other one, they'll take your most recent one, put it, and then they process them all at once.
Oh.
So do one, get it in line, and then do some more later.
Oh, no kidding, huh? So it's not like these chunks of time, like, oh.
That's interesting.
That's really cool. They just put it in your pile, in your suppressor pile.
Yep.
And then when they're done, they're done.
Get a Mark pile going, Mark.
I'm
going
to do it.
Do it.
He's going to do it, everybody.
Dude, cans are cool.
Hopefully.
Cans are cool. Make the shirt.
Hopefully everybody everybody out there.
They're actually hot.
You're all thinking about it now. I just got what you said there. I was trying to process it. Hopefully you're all thinking about it now, though. Getting a suppressor if you don't already have one. It's awesome. We can't stress it enough. And hopefully this has been a little bit of a help to you, too, if you're trying to figure out which one to get, like Mark here was. And,
If you have questions about suppressors,
hit us up in the comments section below if you're watching on YouTube or over on Instagram. And if not, normally I like to say stuff like, oh, let us know what kind of suppressor you've got. But I'm sure that it's probably also at the bottom of a lake. So perhaps we
even
need
though
to
you already registered it.
Yeah, we need to address the boat problem that everybody seems to be having.
I don't think I'm going to go buy one. I'm just going to go diving.
Sure.
the ocean floor is just littered with suppressors.
Yeah, exactly. So cool. With that said, thanks everybody for listening as usual. We'll see you on the next one. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
All right, that'll wrap it up for this episode of the Vortex Nation podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hit that subscribe button so you can always stay up to date on the latest happenings over here at the Vortex Nation podcast. Leave us a review or comment down below. We want to hear what you have to say about the show, maybe what you like, maybe what you didn't like, so that way we can make these podcasts as good as they can be. You can also follow us on Instagram at Vortex Nation Podcast. We'll be posting about each episode released, so that way you can go back, find these things, maybe grab a little nugget of information that you can take with you to the range, out in the field, or maybe to the kitchen if we're talking about some good food. So, again, everybody, thanks, and happy hunting and shooting.
We appreciate it. Have a good one.